Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is a lively Monday live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. 1 hour from now, plenty of both, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong on a Monday. I got to tell you something, but between NBA basketball, between the Logan Paul fight with Mayweather, between the United States men's national team, what a crazy Sunday. That soccer match was nuts, and people throwing water bottles at our guys. That was nuts.
I didn't see all the people talking about how they shouldn't be throwing water bottles. It's not a big deal last night. They're throwing the souvenir cups. My goodness, it got out of hand. But that was a great sports weekend.
Oh, it was a great Sunday and a great sports weekend. And it's such a pleasure to have you in. Lots of choices out there. Well, the Clippers won. They're a strange franchise. This was a strange series. And their superstar is a strange guy. First time ever, both teams lost all their home games for the first six games, and then the champ of the series wins the home game, game seven. And I'm still not sure if I like the Clippers. Love Kawhi when he's engaged. Friday, he was LeBron-esque. 45 points, 18 of 25 shooting in an NBA playoff game. Sunday, he was near perfect, 28, 10, and 9. If you go to games 6 and 7, I mean, this is LeBron in his prime. Kawhi shot 100% from the free throw line, 50% on threes, and 70% from the field, and was the top defender, guarded Luka. That is LeBron in his prime. But my takeaway is, why did it take this long? The Clippers won 47 games in the regular season, and that's with Kawhi missing 20 and Paul George missing, 18? They were the much better team. Their coach, had, you know, the Clippers had won a championship, and their bench is better, and their star is a veteran star, and their number two is better, and they're deeper, and this went seven. I know Clipper fans want to throw a parade today, but because this series went seven, you have to face Utah and Utah tomorrow. And you're going to lose that. And you're going to be digging yourself out of another hole. You know, Kawhi Leonard, we all know this. He started, it got termed once he did it, load management. Where he just, you're not quite sure if the body's right. He takes 20 games off a year in his prime. Like, this is his prime. This isn't LeBron in year 18. This is his prime. But Kawhi also appears to take load management games mentally when he plays, but he's just kind of drifting around, and he's giving you about 65, 70%. He wasn't guarding Luka for the first several games in this series. Didn't LeBron always just embrace that challenge and say, D-Wade, embrace that challenge? The greats embrace that challenge, the Kevin Garnetts. He's just an interesting cat. So this morning I wake up and my question is, do I like the Clippers? No, I just like Kawhi when he's completely engaged. He is the best get a basket and get a stop guy in the NBA. There's no doubt. I've been saying that for years. You need a stop, he's it. You need a basket, he's it. But remember, as your Clipper parade is working its way down Main Street, they lost in the second round last year. And if they lose against Utah, this is a deep, talented Utah team with home court advantage, great coach. They shoot 3 points. Unlike Dallas, Utah plays defense. Unlike Dallas, a lot of these stars, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, they've been around a long time. Now Utah does not have a matchup for Kawhi. So he has got to be engaged. Game one, because this team is much better than Dallas. They've got more star power, more than one guy who can hit a three. I mean, Luka was exhausted by the fourth quarter in most of these games. But this morning, my question is, do I like the Clippers? Not really. I think it's a strange franchise. It was a bizarre series. It was totally fitting. And Kawhi's a different cat. And we are still, as a Clipper fan, you're still not out of the woods. They lost round two last year, and they got rid of Trez, and they fired Doc. And if they lose round two of this year, trust me, kabloom is still around the corner. So I want to talk about the Brooklyn Nets. I didn't know what I should do with my second story today, but I want to talk about the Brooklyn Nets because they're fascinating. So there's four or five things we know to be true historically in the NBA that you need. We know that this isn't an argument. Generally, like to win an NBA championship, you got to have good chemistry. It helps if your coach has coached in the playoffs before. Health is key. How many teams have we seen upended, unravel because of health? And the other thing is, you got to be a top 15 team defensively or you cannot win a championship. It's just the way it works. In fact, only one team's been out of the top 15 defensively in 30 years, won a title. That was the Shaq Kobe team. And they were actually number one in the playoffs defensively, but they were so good and so dominant, they kind of mailed it in defensively in the regular season. So these are the four things that matter. Oh, wait, Brooklyn has none of them. Kyrie, Harden, and KD played eight games total. Harden's already hurt. Steve Nash has no coaching experience in high school, college, or the pros, and their defense is 23rd. Yet they are so gifted and so skilled, they beat a Milwaukee team that has all four of those. How discouraging must that be? I'm watching that game and I'm thinking, James Harden's out in the first minute, and Brooklyn still almost effortlessly wins that game. Brooklyn is the Tesla of the NBA. Tesla does everything wrong. Elon Musk is crazy. He's a CEO. Now he's doing cryptocurrency. He's smoking pot on podcasts. J.D. Power and Associates says you'll have more problems as a Tesla owner in the first 3 months of owning it than all other 31 automakers in America. It took him 17 years to make a profit. 17 years to have a profitable year at Tesla. But every time you look at Tesla stock, you're like, yeah, it's great. It's been on fire for 4 years. They do everything wrong. But they have a brilliant guy, crazy town, but a brilliant guy running the company, and that is Brooklyn. They don't play really good defense. They don't have their health. They don't have their chemistry. Their coach has no experience. Milwaukee has all that, and they fly through them. And my takeaway is the message that sends to Damian Lillard, to Zion, to Luka, to a young Ja Morant, is don't waste your time. Go hook up with A's. I mean, what, Damian Lillard. I mean, that you're going to keep carrying B and C players? I mean, Zion. I mean, I like Lonzo Ball too, but Brooklyn's messaging is you don't have to have the perfect coach, the perfect chemistry. You can take games off. You don't even have to be healthy. There's a reason we send an all-star team to the Olympics. There's a reason AAU basketball is essentially in Atlanta, Detroit, Seattle, Dallas, Philadelphia. All the best players play on one or two teams. It's just easier. You don't have to have perfect chemistry in AAU. By the way, Kentucky's one of the winningest programs. They don't even have a senior night, just a revolving door of one-year players, and they win a bunch of games. So the basketball culture in America, the message if Brooklyn wins is chemistry, health, coaching, defense, just go team up with really, really great players. And we've always kind of known that. But increasingly, you know, with the draft, such a crapshoot because you have no film on these kids. They're all 18 years old. I look around and even Giannis in Milwaukee. So who's the best player in Milwaukee? Giannis. Well, he was great. Chris Middleton. 0 for 5 on threes. Chris Middleton's a B. You're trying to sell me as an A. And Chris Middleton didn't show up in game one. KD did. Kyrie did. The former A, Blake Griffin, did. Giannis did. I mean, I'm telling you, I watched Brooklyn, and my takeaway was, God, everything that matters doesn't matter when you have that much talent. It's Tesla. They do everything wrong. Stock's still going through the roof. Maybe it's a bubble. Maybe it implodes. But that was discouraging if you're Milwaukee. If Harden is out for game two, if Milwaukee loses game two with the veteran coach and with the system and the defense and the chemistry and the health, like, series over. Like, that, I'm not sure, even if you go home, I'm not sure you overcome that. All right, we got a lot of stuff going on. Calling right, calling wrong in 1 hour. Julio Jones moves. Boy, it's amazing. We never learn. Every time a big star free agent moves, everybody goes crazy. Everybody goes crazy. Julio Jones, he's not going to win a game for Tennessee. He's not going to win a game. I'll talk about that coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Want a gift for dad? Give him something that's comfortable. It's what I wear. Tommy John underwear. 20% off your first order. Go to TommyJohn.com/Herd, H-E-R-D, for details. TommyJohn.com. So we fall for this every time. OBJ goes to Cleveland, and oh my God, it's going to change the world. And actually, he and Baker work worse together than any other tight end wide receiver combo. And Jarvis Landry's actually the more consistent performer, and it's a running team. But every OBJ to Cleveland's going to change the world. It didn't change anything in the huddle of Cleveland. So Julio Jones, really expensive, still very good, but out of his prime, goes to Tennessee and the interweb implodes. Let me just throw some numbers at you, data and stuff. Julio Jones, 10-year average, and I'm taking, you know, 5 or 6 years in the middle in his prime. He's no longer there. He's still good, but he's no longer in his prime. 85 catches, 6 touchdowns. Now that's with Matt Ryan. Pretty damn good. Matt Ryan's been an MVP. Ryan Tannehill never has. Matt Ryan's been to a Super Bowl. Ryan Tannehill has not. Matt Ryan had Kyle Shanahan, best offensive coordinator in a decade. Okay. So with that, Julio Jones gives you 85 catches, 6 touchdowns. Whew, we're adding all that? Well, not really, because Tennessee just got rid of Corey Davis. Jets paid a lot for him. Corey Davis last year, 65 catches, 5 touchdowns. So Julio was 20 catches and a touchdown difference. And Julio Jones is better. I'm not arguing that. But the Titans have a new offensive coordinator. That will take some time. Julio Jones doesn't have time. He's no longer in his prime. By the way, the Titans have an emerging star at wide receiver, A.J. Brown. Yeah, he's going to get a lot of looks. The Titans, 30th in the NFL in percentage of pass plays. It's a run culture. Derrick Henry is the team. Julio Jones is great, but Julio Jones to the Titans is like having the best pool in Seattle. It sounds really cool, and there's a handful of days. It's amazing in August, but it doesn't really change your life. It's just not that available. OBJ to Cleveland. If I had to hear another NFL reporter and blogger and media person tell me how it was going to change everything, he could be the 9th most important offensive player. It's Nick Chubb. It's Jarvis Landry. It's the tight ends. It's their amazing offensive line. Expensive. Increasingly brittle. Listen, Julio Jones is great. This is a run culture. Does it make Tennessee better than Kansas City? No. Buffalo? No. Cleveland's roster? Not close. I don't think it doesn't make them better than Baltimore. Baltimore appears to have solved their wide receiver issues. So this is, I like Julio Jones. I think Julio Jones is a really good player. Excellent. But he's out of his prime. Because of his expense, it will limit other things you can do, and Tennessee's O-line is not as good as it was several years ago. They lost their right tackle. They've never replaced him. Their secondary is depending on kids to solve their issues. Their pass rush is at times completely regrettable. You can sell me on Julio to Tennessee is going to change the temperature of the room. The Colts are winning that division. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, it really happens. Floyd Mayweather really fought Logan Paul.
I watched every second of it. So did you?
I did. I watched every second of the whole night, actually, starting with the the Chad Ochocinco fight.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, he did not get knocked out. He got knocked down. He got back up. But these are exhibition fights, so there's not actual boxing rules going on here.
Yeah.
But it went the distance. The Mayweather-Paul fight.
Now,
all 8 rounds.
Now, Floyd is 44 and weighed about 30 pounds less. So you can see Logan Paul looks like Paul Bunyan.
I mean, yes. He was laying on him by the end of the fight.
But it was a real fight.
Listen, it crushes my soul in the deepest way to say this. But I must, because we all watched it last night. And I love boxing. You love boxing. I don't think that you can, just quote Snoop, play boxing. And that is the greatest defensive fighter in the history of the sport.
Easily.
Even at the age of 44. And he takes immaculate care of his body.
Yeah.
And he didn't go down. Like, I know everyone says that Mayweather is not a knockout fighter, and he's not, but he's still Floyd Mayweather. He's not 67.
Everybody can laugh at Logan Paul and Jake Paul. Now, Jake Paul, his brother, is a better fighter than Logan. But the messaging after the fight from Logan Paul, I thought was amazing. He said, listen, don't let anybody in the world tell you you can't do something. I'm a YouTube guy. I wanted a box, and I have poured my life into it. And I got to tell you something. I've seen Mayweather humiliate boxers a lot worse than Logan Paul. Logan Paul did not embarrass himself. And don't kid yourself. Mayweather was going for the knockout here. No, question.
If there's any embarrassment to be had, it's not on Logan Paul's end of it. Now, listen, it does make things easier to accomplish your dreams when you have 5 billion YouTube views. That's why you're in the ring with Mayweather. Let's keep it real. But yeah, I mean, he's not a fighter. And he went in there. Listen, I don't necessarily know if there is a number that you could put me in the ring with a professional boxer, especially the pedigree of Floyd Mayweather. Like, that's a very scary thing to do. I know everybody out here thinks they're tough.
Yeah.
Like, that was a very difficult thing to do.
Hats off to Logan Paul. Good for you, brother. I thought it was a hell of an effort. And I just watched it and I thought, you know what? He got me to spend $49, and you can make fun of me for doing that, but there's a lot of people in America that spent $49 and watched it on their phone. Showtime, get your app together.
Listen, I've spent $49 on far less entertaining things. So we were all going to watch it regardless. I know everyone says, like, I'm not going to watch it, whatever. Okay. If you didn't watch it, you're not in on the fun today. So good for you.
By the way, I spend $69 to watch UFC fight. So I like fights. So it's
I mean, this is, you're paying for entertainment. Like, that's what it is. It's not like if it was actually, if it had not gone all 8 rounds, then I think you could have complained more that you were robbed of it. But like, you got the full night's worth of entertainment out of your dollars. I'm very interested to see what the pay-per-view numbers are at the end of it. Now, obviously, this fight doesn't count towards either one of their records. The Florida Boxing Commission wouldn't officially sanction it. They did provide the referee, obviously, but because of the disparity in weight and size, they couldn't make it an official fight. Not that it was going to count anyway. Like, Mayweather is no longer fighting real fights anymore, but it's just, for the record, it's not going to count for either one of them.
Yeah.
So, to end last night, we had a little fun with the U.S. men's national team.
Oh, my Lord.
Sorry to my neighbors. I was yelling. There's nothing like U.S. soccer, men's or women's, winning anything.
And this is our biggest rival. This is Mexico.
It was great. So, the men's national team beat Mexico last night in the CONCACAF Nations League final, 3-2. But it was not without a lot of excitement.
Oh, my Lord.
So the U.S. came back from behind twice. Christian Pulisic scored the game winner off a penalty kick in extra time, showing that. Mexico did have a chance to even things up. It was a lot of drama in this game. But backup goalkeeper Ethan Horvath made the save to secure the win. It was really crazy. At this moment right here, Christian is running over to the corner to do a little gloating, and there's
water bottles.
They're making it rain. Water bottles and soda. I forget who it was, got hit in the head.
The most encouraging part of this to me was Team USA did not play flawless. They gave up a horrific opening goal, but had the talent to overcome it. I mean, when they were down 1-0, I mean, they were so bad in the first 15 minutes, and yet they won over our biggest rival. So this was something. You and I have been talking about this. because it's so infrequent, we don't talk a lot of soccer.
Right.
Our women's team's the best in the world. That's, you know, from Mia Hamm on, best in the world. Our men's team couldn't make the World Cup. But I will say this. This is the greatest collection of young talent by far we've had in my lifetime. And it felt like last night, it was like, offensively, we have moments when we're kind of gifted, when we're kind of good.
You have to start building somewhere.
Yep.
And it was, I thought it was a very positive moment for the men's national team last night. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. So Trae Young and the Hawks shocked the top seeded Sixers yesterday with the 128-124 win in game one. Trae continued his hot streak, team high 35 points, and defensive player of the year candidate Ben Simmons is hoping to be the primary defender on Trae in game two.
Yeah, I mean, I probably will do that. I mean, I want to, so if the refs ain't going to call so many fouls, if I can be physical and be 6'10", then I'll be 6'10", but we'll see.
Well, listen, if someone knows how to get the refs to blow the whistle, it's Trae Young, so that might not be the best strategy. The Sixers did get back in this game. They gave him a little push right at the end, but look, Joel Embiid had 39 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists. His first game back since the meniscus in his right knee. And Ben Simmons had 17 points. Trae Young had 35, John Collins had 21, and Bogdanovich had 21. The Hawks are legit.
You know what? Atlanta's always been, Joy, a really good NBA market without really good teams. So I know a lot of, you know, NBA players through the years have always said, like, you go to an Atlanta game, now 70% of the fans are not rooting for the Hawks. But when I grew up, when I was younger, you know, Atlanta had Dominique Wilkins, and they were always, I've always thought Atlanta and San Francisco, the Warriors were bad for 30 years, Joy. And then when they get good, you forget how loyal, how great the Warrior fans are. When I was a kid, they were the first great NBA team I ever saw with Rick Barry. Atlanta's always been a really good basketball city, but because it's the South and it's SEC, we just think it's a football. It's just football area. But it's nice to see Atlanta matter, because I think there's a huge, loyal fan base in Atlanta that loves the NBA.
Yeah, and Atlanta is a great American city, and it's growing constantly. So it's great to have competitive basketball there.
In the South.
I think this has just been an incredible playoff run for Trae Young. Like, he's become a villain for some.
No, but he's a good villain,
and I love it.
He's not a jerk villain.
No,
he's a
and stop me.
By the way, everybody's like, "Ooh, Trae Young's." Christian Pulisic scored. He went over to the crowd and said, "Christian Pulisic, he's a little bit of a villain too." It's okay.
You gotta have a little showmanship.
Yes,
Pulisic. It adds to the drama.
Yes, it's like, it's okay to do the shh to the fans. Especially if they're throwing water bottles and spitting on you. You know, you at least get that. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
All sorts of stuff. Rick Bucher joining us now, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. You know, I said to start the show, the Clippers are a strange franchise. It was a strange series. Kawhi is sort of a strange cat. Do I like the Clippers, or do I just like Kawhi when he turns into LeBron about three games a series? I mean, now they go and face Utah, that does not have a wing to stop Kawhi. He could have a monster series, right. But Utah's rested. Utah plays defense. Dallas doesn't. What do you think Dallas – I think the Clippers are going to fall into another hole and have to fight their way out of it. That's kind of my projection going forward.
There's always that possibility. I'm with you, Colin. I know what the Clippers are on paper, but we don't always see that on the court. I do believe that Rick Carlisle and the Dallas Mavericks did the Clippers a great service by working their way to playing Boban Marjanovic. Now, it's not as if Boban is Rudy Gobert by any stretch. They're not in the same category. But playing that big in the middle, where you go small and have to attack the rim and then either get past him or kick it for threes, that became the formula for the Clippers by the end of the series. And hats off to Ty Lue, because he's the one who really utilized that entire roster. Going to a Luke Kennard, Luke Kennard and Terrence Mann played a total of 14 seconds in game one. Patrick Beverley and Ivica Zubac were starters. They were out of the rotation.
Yep.
Terrence Mann and Luke Kennard were the biggest subs coming off the bench in Game 7. And this is a Luke Kennard that he had no familiarity with because Kennard wasn't on the team last year. So I just believe that Ty Lue did a tremendous amount of changes in comparison to what Doc Rivers didn't do last year. I went and looked at the Denver series. Same starting lineup, same rotation in Game 1 against Denver as in Game 7 when they lost. And meanwhile, Ty was making all sorts of changes. So, but the bottom line is they had to deal with Dallas realizing that they couldn't play small. Dallas played small, played better at the beginning of the series. And Ty Lue made adjustments.
Yeah.
And then Carlisle countered and went big with Boban. And the Clippers figured that out. So having had to play that way against Boban, I believe they go into this series feeling much more confident about their small ball capabilities and utilizing the entire roster than they would have otherwise. But in terms of are they going to sustain this now, who the hell knows? The Clippers, as soon as they get to a point where they're like, hey, did we prove who we are? Oh, we did? Okay, can we downshift? And then they get into trouble and have to get going again. So hopefully they've learned their lesson, but we won't find out until we see it.
You know, it's funny. I've said this for years. If I was an NBA free agent, Dallas would always be at the top of my list. Number one, no state tax. Mm. Number two, it's in the middle of the country. So I don't have a 6-hour flight either way, middle of the country. It's a great city for young people, beautiful people. You know, there's a lot of things to do. Yet they don't land free agents. They couldn't get Dirk a two. And I look at Luka and I think, it's harder to find a two than ever because these kids coming out of high school and college, you have a year of tape. It's all projection. You don't really know what you're getting. You know, and then sometimes you hit the lottery and you get like Trae Young. And I look at Luka, and to me, my takeaway this morning is the pressure now is not on Luka. The pressure's on Mark Cuban. He couldn't find a two or Dirk, and you settled for a title. I don't know why they can't get free agents in Dallas. Great place to live, but, I mean, let's be honest. Porzingis is not the answer, right?
No, Porzingis is not the answer as a number two. The only thing I don't like about Dallas is the airport. I hate that airport. It's a city unto itself. That said, here's the tricky part with Luka Doncic now, and this is the one way in which I put him in the LeBron James category, is that you need very particular players around him.
Yeah.
And you need a number two that can be very effective without necessarily having the ball in his hands. That's what makes, like, you want him to be able to go one-on-one. You want that guy to be able to get you shots in need situations, but he may not be dominating the ball or seeing the ball for three quarters, and then he's got to light it up in the fourth. That's what makes guys very hard to find that can fit that two spot next to a guy who's going to dominate the ball the way Doncic is. The other part of it is that Doncic is really kind of while he's a point guard, he plays a slower big man style against a lot of guys.
Yeah.
You play a slower pace. He's going to work his way to his spots. I think more than anything, finding a way to play fast and still allow him to play that slow style is another tricky element to how do you build this team. So there aren't any, you have a great talent, and that's sometimes a curse because now you have to make good around that great talent that dominates the ball. How do you ultimately do that? And I there are no easy answers. I immediately think of a guy like a Bradley Beal that would be the ideal number two because he demonstrated with Russell Westbrook this year that doesn't necessarily have the ball in his hands all the time and can still deliver big performances. That would be the number one guy on my list in terms of trying to get him and put him next to Luka.
So I was watching Milwaukee and Brooklyn, and I've been a cynic of Brooklyn first month of the season. Then I came around and said, you know, it's just great players play together. We've seen it at the Olympics. We see it in AAU. We see it at Kentucky. You can throw great players together and they can play. And I'm thinking to myself after game one, I'm like, Jesus, how discouraging for Milwaukee. Milwaukee's got better health, better chemistry, a veteran coach. And I really, I sat there and I thought to myself, the messaging for a Dame or a Luka or a Zion is just go play with A's. You'll figure out the chemistry. You'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Seriously, Harden doesn't play game two. If Milwaukee loses game two, boy, doesn't that get into that head of that Milwaukee franchise a little bit?
Well, it gets in the head of every basketball aficionado because it means that AAU basketball has taken over the NBA.
That's
we
right.
We don't need to play games. We just show up for the weekend and let's play the tournament.
That's
we
right.
got the best players so we can play. And here's the thing that we've seen through, and this is the question that I had, because the three-point shot, the ability to take a ton of them and make a ton of them, had a huge influence on the regular season. We saw that with Steph Curry dragging the Warriors into contention for a playoff spot. We saw it with the Lakers not being able to shoot the three. And that's what we've seen so far in these playoffs, and particularly coming up in this next round. The Brooklyn Nets just have more guys who can consistently dribble, penetrate, and kick it for threes. And if you look at all the games over the weekend, the team that shot the three the best and the most are the teams that won going away. It was the same with the Clippers-Mavs series.
Yeah.
Mavs outshot them early and, as a result, won. Clippers found their way, played small, started shooting the three the way they did all the regular season. Boom, they win the series.
Yeah.
And that's what I saw more than anything else between Brooklyn and the Bucks and Atlanta and Philadelphia. And that's where you look at Philadelphia and you look at Milwaukee. Like you, I like both of those teams as playoff teams, largely because of how they play defense. But if you can get up enough threes and you can get to the free throw line, you can turn that norm, what is normal in the postseason, on its head. And it now becomes shooting the three is more important than playing defense. And that was never the case in the postseason, but it just may be the case in this postseason. And it's why I'm not changing my opinion of the Nets just yet, but we may have changed the dynamic of how playoff games are won. And if we have, then the Nets have an advantage that I thought was not going to be big enough considering their disadvantage playing defense.
Good stuff, Rick Bucher, Fox Sports. Good talking to you, bud.
You got it, Colin.
Yeah, no, he really makes the point we've been making now for a couple of weeks, which is AAU basketball is what Brooklyn is. You just find the best players. You'll have a Detroit Metro team or Atlanta Metro or Dallas. You know, that's what you do in the big cities, Philadelphia. And the five or six or seven or eight best players go to one or two teams, and they win. And there's no chemistry, and it doesn't matter, and it doesn't matter what the – you just have more good players. Well, that's always been thought of as like AAU basketball. Well, you know, Kentucky is a little bit of an AAU style, and frankly, Brooklyn's AAU style. I'm not criticizing them, by the way. Everybody should work with better people. I'm not one of these guys that's going to criticize anybody that ever leaves to work with better people. Like, I get Damian Lillard watching Brooklyn on his couch, his nice couch, and going, the hell am I doing here? What am I doing? I totally get it. So if, you know, and I'll say this, it's harder to draft than ever. You used to have 4 years of film on Tim Duncan or Pat Ewing. Now you got 30 games or the G League. Huge projections. You have to guess. And sometimes Atlanta, you guess right. You know, and you get Trae Young. Ja Morant wasn't a guess. We knew he was going to be great, even with 1 year of film. But there were a lot of skeptics on Trae Young. He didn't play defense. He's small. And he hit the Super Bowl, so the power lottery with Trae Young. So it's very interesting. By the way, Peter King has a proposal for the Packers. I disagree with it, but it is interesting. And more on why the Clippers have to win now against Utah. This is everything for the Clippers. Don't think the pressure's gone away. Coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Enjoy spa-like comfort. Turn the water on. It gets hot, never goes off. TanklessMadeSimple.com. Navien tankless water heaters. Navien, 15-year limited warranty. So one of the things that I think worries me about sort of the direction of discussion in America is that everybody goes to social media and everybody's an ist. You're this, you're that, you're racist, you're a bad human being. Take a deep breath. It's okay to be theoretical. I want to live in a society where you can throw out ideas and they're ridiculous and they're stupid, but they're just theoretical discussions. That's how we all grow. And if everybody's petrified to have those discussions, I think it limits us. So, yes, there are clearly bad people on social media and in America, bad actors. We're not disputing that. But we're getting to a point where we're shutting down discussions. And discussions are important that we need to have. Theoretical discussions. Thought conversations that could be absurd. I do a lot of theories. It's like a running joke at the show. Like, I just have my theories. Half are nonsense. But you benefit, I benefit. It makes us all think, right? I get smarter. Hopefully you get smarter. So Peter King had one of these, and I totally disagree with it. But I think it's worthy of conversation. Peter's a smart guy. He proposed an Aaron Rodgers Packer solution. His idea, the Packers commit to trade Aaron Rodgers, but the deal will not happen until next spring. So Mark Murphy and Aaron sit down and say, let's play nice for a year and we'll trade you next spring. And they'll find an exit strategy. Okay. First of all, this would work if there was this thing called trust and Mark Murphy and the front office doesn't trust Aaron, and Aaron has made it pretty clear he doesn't trust the Packers front office. This is a very idealistic way to go about things for Peter King, who I do appreciate. First of all, here's why it wouldn't work. Number one is it's all the media would talk about for a year. The media, let's be honest, Joy and I excluded, a lot of times are lazy. It's an easy low-hanging fruit. It's all they would talk about. Number two is the division he's in is weak and doesn't have a ton of drama. So this drama would be, I mean, the Packers are always the most interesting team in their division, but now they'd be the most interesting drama in the division. Number three is announcing a deadline when you're going to trade your quarterback kills your leverage. The leverage the Packers have now is we got Aaron Rodgers. Want him? Come get him. It is not, please turn in your Aaron Rodgers trade assignment and the teacher will grade it and pass out grades in next spring. This is a thought experiment. It's a proposal. It's theoretical. I love Peter King. But I believe when it comes to divorces, especially ones, I mean, a lot of times people aren't getting along and you go to therapy with a hope of resolution. Folks, we know because Aaron's 37 years old with two collarbone surgeries and is an expensive guy, right? He's not going to be there very long. This is an impending divorce. This is one everybody in the room knows is going to last 1 year max. They've ticked off each other. They don't trust each other. So my theory on this is rip the Band-Aid off. It's all now timing. And since the team, Green Bay, and I don't like this, I don't like franchise tags for players, but since the team has the power, they own his rights, you can choose when you want to rip the Band-Aid off. And that's just the reality of the CBA. Aaron's made a good living. Aaron's great, but he has no power here. I mean, if he holds out for a year, he loses over $35 million. I mean, if he doesn't get Jeopardy, you're never going to get that money back. You're never going to get. That's why they tell college players, if you're great as a junior, go to the pros. You're never going to get that $7, $8 million back, your signing bonus or whatever it is. So to me, this is a rip the Band-Aid situation off. I think Peter King's a little idealistic here. You'd need trust. You don't have it. In a perfect world, it would be nice to say, all right, everybody, give us your best offer. But when everybody knows you got to trade somebody, I always say this in the NBA. If a player is unhappy, move him quietly. I'll give you an example. 99% of you don't know this or would not remember this. Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in Milwaukee. He told the Milwaukee Bucks a year before, I want out. Milwaukee didn't leak it. We didn't have the media back then. Milwaukee got a haul and was competitive for 8 to 10 years. Why? Nobody knew about it, and the Bucks worked on that puppy behind the scenes. Now, you can't do that anymore. Stuff leaks. But when somebody wants out, waiting is never the answer. Just rip it off. If I was Green Bay, I've said I'd trade him somewhere in the season trading deadline to ensure I get the right conference for him and he doesn't kick our butt, at least in PR for the first year. All right, next hour, top of it, Colin right, Colin wrong, plenty of both. Monday's flying by. We got a lot of stuff just starting. It's the Herd.